This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Wednesday, August 10th, 2022 edition. I am Justin Klein, and I look forward to this hour with you addressing your finance and investment questions. And as always, the phone number, it does not change. It's 888-99-CHART. You can call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Leave a message. We will answer it on a future show. Or if you're listening during our live stream program, 4 to 5 Pacific time each and every weekday, you can always call and talk to us live. Either way, it's the same number, 888-99-CHART. Now, I've got an action-packed podcast for you today, and my focus point today concerns the headline, "The Top Central Bankers Say the Fed is Far From Done." And I'm going to dig into this because this is a big headline. This is out of Fortune, a very common publication, and I need to really get into the details of how the future policy will impact markets, because that's ultimately what we want to know: how it will impact markets, how it will impact the economy as a whole. Now, time permitting, I have some other ones on the docket as well. One is valuations have come in. We've seen valuations drop, especially on those bigger, growthier names, the more expensive part of the market. And the big question is, has it come down enough? Has it come down enough to mark some sort of great buying opportunity? So we're going to look at that. Also, there's some major errors when it comes to Equifax and its credit score earlier this year. How does that impact, could potentially impact you? And what do you do if you suspect your credit score is incorrect? And then lastly, the digital dollar, central bank digital currency, CBDCs, and the US, and what steps are being taken right now to go further down that path of a US dollar-backed CBDC. So we're going to look at that. Now, I see some caller question, voice bank questions ready to play, and it looks like we might get to the question about buying foreign stocks and about apps, APPS Digital Turbine. So I've got all that planned for this episode of Invest Talk, and of course, I'll take your live calls at 888-99-CHART. Now let's take a look at the market today. It was a very bullish day and a bit of a breakout, certainly above a crucial resistance level that we had been consolidating at for most of the last week and a half. And that likely means we're headed higher. Looks like it wants to attack the 200-day moving average on the S&P and the downtrend line from the peak back in January. And so the big question is, how far does this market rally have? Now, the inflation number came out today, and that was slightly better than had been expected. The expectation was 8.7%, a deceleration in growth of the inflation. But it was a bit lower than that, 8.52. So not a huge difference, but certainly something that is pointing the market to a Fed policy that is a little less hawkish, which we're going to get into later in the show. But ultimately, what happened was the odds of a 75 versus 50 basis point hike in September flipped from kind of 65-35 in favor of a 75 basis point cut increase, and now it's kind of flips 65-35 in favor of a 50 basis point increase. And so that certainly helped the market. The dollar was weaker, interest rates were down a bit, and overall was a bullish day, and the volatility index was down. And so continue to work off this oversold mark environments on like a weekly basis from a sentiment perspective, and incrementally getting more bullish overall. Doesn't mean we're going to go to new highs, but certainly near term, more upside looks in the cards. Now let's get to our first caller question right now.
Hello, Steve or Justin. Love the show. I'm a longtime listener now. Okay, so I had a question for you. Digital Turbine, APPF. There's another podcast I listen to when I've gone through all yours first, and they highly recommend this one. So I put it on my watch list. If you could take a look at it and let me know if it's a good thing for future growth, I'd appreciate it. Bye.
All right, looking at Digital Turbine, and it developed mobile software that enables mobile content distribution and transactions. And earnings are expected to fall in the coming year, 13%, and then go up 22% the following year. But both of those expectations continue to come down. So that's one issue that I have here. Now, modest debt levels, which is good. It trades at about a 3x price to sales. That's pretty good. Enterprise value to EBITDA, about 15. So, you know, certainly not egregious anymore. But its growth continues to slow in a dramatic fashion. Last quarter, revenues were up only 19% and earnings up 12%, whereas a year ago, revenues were up 168% and earnings were up 162%. So what you're seeing is a leveling out of growth and earnings. And once again, earnings expectations are expected to fall. And that's what worries me. And another issue here is that it is very tied to the ad market. Okay, and that's something I'm not a big fan of, that you know, the ad market is certainly slowing. Now, is it a much better value than it was at its all-time high around $94 per share? It's down 75% since then. Yes, it is. But technically, I'm not seeing anything that's getting me overly excited. This bounce, frankly, has been fairly weak. It's gone from about 15 now to the low 20s, still below its 100-day moving average, and even the earnings didn't really spark it higher. And so I'm passing on Digital Turbine for now. I don't see the technicals really lining up, and the fundamentals are just slowing too dramatically for me to be paying an above-market multiple. So certainly interesting name on my watch list. You know, in the low teens, I'd probably pick it up. Makes a double bottom, I'd probably pick it up, but not here at 23. Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 889-924278. Let's go to Fu in Ohio, wants to ask about Tesla.
Hey, Justin, how you doing?
Doing well.
I have a lot of Tesla shares, and I know that you think that it's a overvalued. It's a stock that is a story stock, but I beg to differ just because I have two cars myself, and I also have, they have AI, they have insurance, they have charging, they have solar, they have energy. So I guess my take is it's like 5-6 companies that are combined into one mega stock that I think you think is overvalued. So I just want to see what your opinion is on that.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's overvalued. Most of their cash, though, they're not making money off of their cars.
A lot of money off of $18 billion in cash.
Because they're issuing a lot of shares. Their shares outstanding are now at a billion shares outstanding. 10 years ago, that was at 528 million shares outstanding. So they've doubled their share count over the last 10 years. So if they were that successful, then why do they need to continue to issue more and more shares each and every quarter? And the reason is because it's just not a very successful business when it comes to selling cars. Now, they're good at getting EV credits and subsidies and things like that. And certainly that's good, as long as those carbon credit prices continue to go up and they're able to capitalize on government subsidies. Sure. But I still stand by the fact that the auto industry is very competitive. It's a very low margin, highly capital intensive business, and that's also very cyclical. And you're already seeing that recently across the board. And Tesla's, you know, their growth has certainly slowed recently as well. So, you know, I still think it's egregiously overvalued at nearly $1 trillion in value. And so, you know, you can disagree with me, but ultimately, I still stand by that. Still drastically overvalued. And, you know, Elon continuing to kind of get a little more political and the Twitter thing, I don't think that's healthy for the company or the image long term. I talked before about how the average Tesla or EV buyer was more apt to buy a Tesla before Elon's whole Twitter and calling himself a Republican. And that alienated a lot of EV buyers. About 15% of the market of EV buyers are now looking elsewhere besides Tesla. So, you know, as he becomes continually more divisive, that's certainly going to weigh on the brand as well. So that's my take on Tesla, and I would certainly be selling. Now we're heading into a break, and I welcome your finance and investment questions now. No question is too simple or too complex. You set the agenda. So I'm here for you. So give us a call on InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART.
Why do listener questions make InvestTalk better?
Which of these would you recommend?
Because each caller presents fresh questions in their voice.
I was curious if you still think aluminum has a ways to go from here.
When do I know the right time to take profits?
Should I be looking for an exit? Should I be holding here?
And listeners instinctively realize that InvestTalk uniquely offers a welcome dose of investing satisfaction.
I think you have a terrific show, and I've learned a whole lot.
Hey guys, love your show. I've been listening for several years now, and I've learned a lot.
Justin Klein and Steve Peasley understand what investors need and want.
I would look at it from a tax perspective. If there's no tax implications, move on, find better ways to use that money.
I'm going with the odds. I think a half position now would at least get you in it and get you watching it so you won't lose track of it.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
You've got a portfolio to grow and protect, so get your finance and investment questions together and call Steve Peasley and Justin Klein. They're ready with their unbiased answers. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, guys. How's it going, man? I just wanted to say I love the show. I had a question for you guys. So I'm looking at a REIT. It is called Prologis. The ticker symbol is PLD. Just wanted to get you guys' opinion on it, you know, manufacturing and stuff back, you know, stateside. Wonder if this would be a good company to get into. Do you think it's a good investment, and, you know, what would be an ideal buying point for you guys? Thanks. Just let me know on the next show. Appreciate it.
All right. Looking at Prologis, and this is one of the largest industrial warehouse REITs in the U.S., and has about a $100 billion market cap. And they did very, very well during the COVID shutdowns because the demand for warehouses were very, very high. And I know this firsthand. I have a very good friend that runs a distribution 3PL company out of Ohio and worked with companies like Shopify, etc. And I talked to him very regularly about how demand is and all that. And he didn't have enough room about a year and a half ago, and every shelf was taken up. Now he has 30% of his warehouse that is open, and, you know, he could certainly add more customers. So a lot of this has to do with the shift in demand for goods, services over goods. We've talked about that, how that's kind of riding the ship, going back to pre-COVID trends. And, you know, that's why I would think that this is likely to reverse a lot of the COVID gains. And it already has to some degree, but it has bounced. So it went from 175 all the way down to 106. Now it bounced to 134. but it's below the 100-day moving average. And historically, it trades at an enterprise value to EBITDA, probably close to the mid to high teens. Now it's at 20. So overall, I think I would be patient on it. I think it's still a bit overvalued. I would be a buyer if it gets back below 100. That's when I would pick up Prologis, PLD. Now it's at 137. Now we're heading into a break. Van from Idaho, hang on. You'll be next on InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART.
One of the most rewarding things I do each weekday is host the InvestTalk podcast. I truly enjoy helping investors. And I know that every question counts and every answer I provide will be unbiased. You, the caller, get to chart the course for each InvestTalk podcast. Call with your questions anytime, day or night, 888-99-CHART.
We're going to head out to Ohio and talk to Van looking at Caterpillar. The owner looking to buy it.
Looking to buy it. Actually, I'm calling from Idaho.
Oh, Idaho. What did I say? Did I say
Ohio?
Ohio. Sorry. Yes, Idaho. Excuse me. I misread it on my screen.
At any rate, I was thinking that Caterpillar hits a bunch of topics for me. It's used in mining. It's used in agriculture. It's used in oil and infrastructure. And it's down like 13% for the year, and it's down 20% from its high this year in April.
Yeah, I think I kind of echo that sentiment. I like the diversity of their business. You're right. It is used in mining. It is used in the energy space. It is used in agriculture. And it's used in the transportation and construction industries. Now, the construction industry is probably the one that has the biggest headwind near term, as you know, higher interest rates and lack of demand for office buildings are going to probably hit parts of that market. But it's pretty well diversified. It's also very global, so globally diversified. And you know, the strong dollar, that probably hurts it a bit, having those foreign currencies, and most of their products are probably produced here. So, you know, I think there are some near-term headwinds that longer-term are probably going to be more like tailwinds, like you said, directed towards infrastructure, for example. I do think that the next big economic crisis is going to be met with government spending on more particularly infrastructure, and I think that would be Caterpillar would certainly benefit from that, and just simply demand for mining and energy assets and agriculture is going to keep that relatively steady. It's trading, I would say, modestly undervalued, not dramatically so, but modestly so. Our value is closer to $200 per share. Now it's at 190. So I don't think it's drastically undervalued, but I like those tailwinds that you speak of, Van.
Sounds good. I sure appreciate it and love your show.
No problem. Thanks for calling, and good luck with it. And I always like to see bread and butter, real businesses that produce cash flow and dividends and aren't just about the story. And this is certainly one of those steady growers and steady businesses and a great American business. So I love it. Now let's turn my focus point, and it concerns the story behind this headline. A top central banker says the Fed is far from done, and really pointing to San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly, and suggests that a 50 basis point increase isn't locked in at the next Fed meeting. But she also said, this was on CBS's Face the Nation, that need to be data dependent. And this echoes what Jerome Powell said really at the last Fed meeting, and that they were open and flexible. And although the jobs report last Friday, and this was kind of on the heels of that, that the jobs report, that it would there was assumption that there'd be a 75 basis point increase at the next meeting. And then basically Powell kind of walked that back, that you can't assume that. And that's why the market is kind of vacillating between those two potential outcomes for the September meeting. But let's back up a little bit and talk about how those Fed hikes are going to feed into markets. Because a lot of people say, oh, the Fed raised rates and that's suddenly going to do X, Y, and Z. This is somewhat priced in. Now, once again, is it 50 or 75 basis points? That's not certain yet. That's not priced in. But minimum 50 basis points is priced in. Okay. So basically, let's call it 5.5 or 2.5. Let's call it 60-ish basis points are priced in. So if they do 50, that's a positive surprise. If they do 75 basis points, that's a negative surprise. Okay, but there's a lot of economic data yet to come. And that's why I don't think the markets are underneath the surface. Yes, the equity markets moved, but you look at the dollar, you look at interest rates, they didn't move a whole lot. And in fact, they reversed a lot of the morning move. And that's because we have a jobs number and we have another inflation number coming out before the next Fed meeting. So is the Fed going to really look too much at this inflation number if the next inflation number is an acceleration from that 8.5 rate? Probably not. Okay, so that's what's going to be most important, is what are the most recent data points saying about the economy, saying about inflation overall. And that will instruct them on how to proceed in the September meeting, and then also indicate what's going to happen in the back half of the year, right? Past September. I think they have two more meetings in, I believe it's going to be early November and then December for the balance of the year after September. And so they're certainly going to guide on those meetings as well. And so that's what's most important. And that's why you see the market move based on this economic data, because the Fed is now data dependent. And you need to take them at their word, and the market is taking them at their word. And this was not a shock that the CPI number came in a little bit lower than expected. Why? Because the PMI figure, the prices paid index, last week also had a big drop, and that's usually a leading indicator. Now we're heading into a break, so I'm ready to take your calls live at 888-99-CHART.
The stock market is volatile. It's constantly changing. So how are you positioned? Is your portfolio properly balanced, or are you taking unnecessary risks? You can get guidance anytime for free if you go to investtalk.com and take the brief Riskalyze quiz.
On the next InvestTalk, the story behind this headline. A new report shows that on rare days, the market rises as much as 5 to 10%. Now, this is from a Wells Fargo analyst, looked at the best 20 days for the S&P 500 between August 1992 and July of this year, and almost half occurred during a bear market, half of these big up days. So we're going to look at that story tomorrow. But now let's pivot over to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a call that came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
How's it going, Stephen? Justin, this is Aaron from Virginia. I'm a longtime listener and also fortunate to have you guys managing my portfolio, and I appreciate everything you guys do. So my question is in regards to the stock market as a whole. I'll hear people say things like, the stock market is not tied in with the economy, the stock market is manipulated, or the stock market, this is something that you guys like to say, is forward-leaning. Now, when people say the stock market, is the stock market, obviously I know it's a group of stocks from companies that have gone public, but the stock market, when it comes to it being controlled, is it controlled by a select group of people that get unfiltered data, you know, better than what most of us get, you know, better than the data that you guys would get to tell you the valuation of stocks? Do they get that and they can know what the future brings, or is the stock market controlled more by a computer software program to where that data is input into it and it knows what to do with the future? And also, as far as people saying the market is manipulated, who would be the people that or thing that can manipulate the market? You know, for example, I'll hear someone talk about the QQQ and it'll shoot up and someone will say, there's no volume to this. This is manipulation. Is that a software algorithm that shoots it up based on something that was input by a person, or is that just something random that happens? I don't know if this question makes sense, but it's just something I always wondered, you know, is the stock market run by people or run by kind of a computer? That's my question. Thank you, guys.
All right. Long question, but let me try to unpack it piece by piece. Now, is the stock market manipulated? At times, it can be, especially around things like option X dates or option expiration, where there are large institutions that are, you know, have big books of options on their balance sheet. And if they can get a particular stock to a certain price, then those options are going to expire worthless. And it makes sense for them to try to manipulate that stock over the short term in order to play those option X games. So those things on a short-term basis certainly do happen. Okay. Now, the market shooting up on low volume, that doesn't necessarily mean that it is market manipulation. It could simply be, hey, there weren't a lot of sellers at those prices. I see that. I have a bar on my charts. Actually, talked about this today on office hours. Was at certain prices, there's a lot of people that have transacted at that price. And if the market goes up into that level, it meets a lot of sellers because people are breaking even. They're selling. And then it typically will consolidate. That happened recently. This last week, it's consolidated an area where there's a lot of volume. And then once we get above that area, there's a lot less volume at that price. And it can easily slice through that level because there aren't a lot of sellers, because there aren't a lot of people that transacted at those prices. And it can easily go up to that next level where there were a lot of there were a lot of transactions. So just because a stock goes up on light volume doesn't mean that it is manipulation. Okay. Now, those are kind of short-term things. Yes, there are algorithms that are built by humans. So there is a human behind it ultimately that can, you know, look for news events and trade based on it. But those aren't really manipulation. That's just more speculation. And so what a lot of people confuse as manipulation has more to do with speculation. Now, when it comes to governments and, say, central banks, are they manipulating the market by manipulating interest rates? And I would say yes. You know, when you're changing the price of money and manipulating the price of money by doing QE and a QT and changing your balance sheet size and really trying to massage those interest rates, well, that does feed into the broader economy and the equity markets. So could you say they're manipulating them indirectly? Absolutely. I would say that because nothing is more important to the financial market, to the overall economy, than the price of money. But overall, you know, would I say the stock market is manipulated? No, not in general, not over the long term. It goes up and down over the long term based on earnings, based on growth of the economy as a whole. Okay. So I know you had a long question. That was kind of a long answer, but hopefully I addressed it all. Now, speaking of longer term, let's touch on the most expensive versus the least expensive stocks in the market. Now, obviously, valuations have come down, especially for the most expensive pocket of the market. And at its peak, the most expensive 25% of the S&P was trading at about 6.5, 6 2/3 times book value, which was higher than what you saw during the dot-com bubble of 2000 when it peaked a little over 6 times book. Now that has certainly come down. Now we're trading at about 5.5 times book. And the big question is, how is that cheap enough? Now, A reset in valuations is simply, so far, not on the same scale as in previous market downturns. Like I said, from the November peak, it went from 6.68 to 5.56 times, the priciest 25% in the S&P. And that's still only slightly lower than where we were at the extremes in the dot-com bubble. Think about that. And the spread over the cheapest 25% of the S&P 5 stocks, which usually compresses in a big way during a recession or market, great market, you know, bear markets, is still at 3.3 times. Now, for context, in 2009, the most expensive part of the market traded at 1.6 times book, and the cheapest traded at 0.85 times book. So when we bottomed, that spread was only a little over one. Now it's at 3.3, okay? And historically, the 2003 bottom, the cheapest quartile, bottomed at about 1.5 times book, and the most expensive bottomed a little under 3 times book. So that spread was roughly 1.25. So when that gets down to 1, 1.25, 1.5, that's when you can see, I think, more sustained bottoms. But so far, there's still a lot of compression for there to go on the most expensive stocks. That's why I say we're still in the early innings of value over growth, because those value stocks are typically those bottom quartile companies within the S&P. And can they go down in value in a bear market? Sure, but probably not nearly as much as that top quartile, which likely is to fall another roughly 50% from here, probably, before it ultimately bottoms. But that can take multi-years. So it's not something that's going to happen tomorrow. And valuation is typically a very poor timing mechanism. Very poor, because things can get more overvalued and they can get more undervalued. But you can see that that pendulum has started to shift, but we're not all the way over to the other side. We're not even really in the middle yet. We're still moving the other direction, and it's likely some time before you get that spread to tighten enough to get a sustainable bottom longer term. There comes another voice bank question, this time from a listener in Denmark.
Hello, Investor. I have a question about buying foreign stocks. Since I'm from Denmark, my name is Janik. Whenever I buy American stocks, which I like for various reasons, I have to pay $12 for the purchase fee. Up to around $4,000 I can buy for this amount. Do you think this is too much to pay for one purchase of a stock? I'd like to hear your opinion, because it's a lot of in the long run for me. Thank you. Bye.
Well, that all depends on what $12 is in relation to the size of the investment. If it's $12 for a $100 investment, obviously that's 12% of that $100. If it's $1,000, it's 1.2%. If it's $10,000, it's 0.12%. So $12 is only in relation to the size of your investment overall. Now, obviously, there's a lot of great companies here in the U.S., but there's great companies in Denmark as well. So, and I would imagine there's also some ADRs there where you can get access to foreign companies on the Denmark exchanges, potentially. So I would look at that. But, you know, is it worth it? You know, if you're not trading a lot and you're more of a long-term holder and you want access to the great U.S. companies that likely have good long-term potential, then $12, if it's a big investment, is nothing. It's a very small percentage. So all is about the percentage of the overall investment. Thanks for the call. Now here comes, I'll bet that a lot of people are amazed on how the investment environment has changed over the past year. And it's evolving once again over the past 6 weeks. So the big question is, now that inflation has peaked, what are the risks? What are the opportunities in the market? And is your portfolio aligned so that you can take advantage of short, medium, and long-term trends? Well, I encourage you to reach out to myself or Steve Peasley at our company, KPP Financial, where we operate. with the same unbiased guidance both on and off air, and we practice parallel investing, which means we invest right alongside our clients. So I encourage you to take advantage of our free portfolio view assessment via telephone or GoToMeeting to send us a message through investtalk.com or call 800-557-5461. That's our office line, in Irvine, California. We'd love to help you in any way. And the sooner you contact us, the sooner we can help you get your portfolio optimized. Now, next up, another caller question. So hang on.
Each day, InvestTalk listeners submit their finance and investment questions via phone or email. And Steve and Justin, thank you for your loyalty. Would you like your question to be put near the top of the list? Just take a minute or two to leave a review and rating for InvestTalk at iTunes. And be sure to include a brief question with your iTunes review comments. Your rating is a vote of confidence that leads to higher visibility and causes more people to discover and listen to InvestTalk. So please tell your friends and family members about the free InvestTalk downloads at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and investtalk.com. Remember to include your brief question when you review and rate on iTunes. And of course, your calls are always welcome 24/7. Don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Paige, calling from California. I'm hoping Justin can help explain a complicated ETF I got myself into that I don't really understand. It goes by IVOL, and that's the Quadratic Interest Rate Volatility and Inflation Hedge ETF. It invests in TIP and also long options on TIPS to generate more returns. And my understanding was that if rates rose, it should do well, but it hasn't done well, and I don't understand. Thanks so much for helping me make sense of this. Bye-bye.
All right. This is the Quadratic Interest Rate Volatility and Inflation Hedge ETF. IVOL is the symbol. And it's been a while. I've actually looked at this before, but honestly, it's been a while, so I can't remember the exact strategy. But from what I remember is, yes, they do hold a lot of TIPS. And if I look at the portfolio overall, that's their main holding. But what they do is they use options to basically play upside expectations of inflation. And this worked really well from mid-2020 all the way until inflation expectations started to peak in basically last summer. And this has been in a downtrend ever since. And that's the issue here, is that it's going to cut both ways. That if inflation expectations rise, this will do well compared to TIPS. And if it falls, then it's not going to do very well. And that's what's happened recently, is inflation expectations continue to moderate, not accelerate, but to moderate and come back down. Now, still higher than they were pre-pandemic, but it's coming down. And that's what's that's a drag on this, as well as, guess what? TIPS are coming down as well. TIP has gone from 130 to 115, which is a big TIPS ETF. So you have kind of double whammy here. And this is a good example of, you want to understand what you're buying. Don't just go based on the name. Too many people just say, oh, it says growth and income, or it says inflation, or it says this, and that's how it's, that's what I'm investing in. Just because a fund or an ETF is titled a certain way does not mean that your interpretation of that title is going to manifest in the performance of the particular fund. You have to understand the assets, understand the strategy. Otherwise, you get into, you know, the situation. And, you know, exposure here, obviously, there was some duration risk, and that's probably the main reason this is down overall. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein, and we have one goal here, is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So if you're going to call, you want to do it right now at 888-99-CHART.
You are listening to InvestTalk, and the market has been interesting. so you'll have important finance and investment questions, and Steve and Justin welcome your calls now. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is Duncan from New York. You guys are doing an excellent job. I have two questions, hopefully that you guys can answer it. I recently had stock ticker iRobot, and I also had stock ticker Open Door. They both recently on the news just said that iRobot's getting acquired for Amazon and Open Door is getting acquired from Zillow. I was thinking about keeping iRobot because this would be what a cheap way to get into the Amazon stock, kind of into my portfolio. And I just wanted to know what your 2 cents was, whether or not I should sell or keep it, or should I also sell or keep Open Door that Zillow's trying to buy out. Looking forward to your advice and have a great day. Bye.
All right. I know iRobot is being acquired by Amazon. You don't want to think of it as a cheap way to buy Amazon. That's not really a good way to think about it. You just want to think of it as, do I want it on Amazon or not? Now, Amazon has a lot of headwinds with higher labor costs, higher transportation costs of delivering packages, etc. Antitrust is also a worry with what's happening with Google. And it's in a downtrend. So, you know, I wouldn't be buying Amazon here. I think it's headed for kind of protracted margin and multiple compression. So I would take your money on iRobot and move on. Now, Open Door, I don't think it's being acquired. I do remember there was some sort of partnership, if I'm remembering correctly, and this is not... Yeah. Yeah, it's a partnership with Zillow. It's a partnership with Zillow. I'd have to look at that partnership, how that would work, but Open Door hasn't really made any money. It continues to lose money, and so I wouldn't be owning that either. So I would just find new ways to deploy that capital into real-world businesses that have good, solid, consistent profits and cash flow. Now let's pivot over to an interesting story, and this is in regards to credit scores and Equifax. And Equifax recently reported that they were reporting inaccurate credit scores to millions of would-be borrowers over about a 3-week period. Now, this was from March 17th to April 6th, and they began to alert lenders of the error in May. So, you know, it kind of went unnoticed for about a month and a half or so, almost 2 months. And this could have resulted in a couple of things. One would be just outright denial of the loan. Another could be higher interest rates. And the way that lenders look at creditors or credits is by taking the average of 3 credit scores and create a combined score. So the odds are pretty good that this difference, it was roughly 20 points typically, would not cause somebody to be denied completely, but it could have pushed them into a higher interest rate. So if you were applying for a loan around that time, you definitely want to go back to your lender, look at that, whether that's a car loan, whether that's a mortgage loan, whatever it is, and see if the Equifax score that was reported was wrong, and if that indeed impacted your overall interest rate. So definitely something to consider. Now, what do you do if going forward? Well, the first thing is you should scrutinize your credit score and look at the different factors. There's a lot of different ways to understand your credit score. I have a couple banks and they both give me my credit score and break down what the factors are and how they're scored. And so you should always be doing that. And other credit card companies that do that, you could always use something like Credit Karma, et cetera, that will break down the percentage of your total balances that you're using, late payments, length of credit score, et cetera. So you should always look over that and see what maybe looks off. And you can challenge that score by sending a message to the company that is reporting something maybe wrong. And each company is required to investigate your claims and then report back to you. So make sure that when you're going to borrow money, especially for a mortgage, that could have a big impact, even a 25 basis point difference in your credit score or in your interest rate, excuse me, could mean thousands and thousands of dollars in costs. So make sure you know your credit score is accurate. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. Steve Peasley and I thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, and it's official. We're over the 44 million mark as of last week, thanks to you. And you can get your Invest Talk podcast anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and be sure to rate and review on iTunes. And if you leave your message or leave a question with your review, we will prioritize your answer. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial.